How's it going, everyone? You're listening to Free Kick, the official AFLW fantasy podcast. My name's Mel, and today I'm joined by Jono as we talk through how to craft your AFLW fantasy team for the upcoming season. Jono, how's it going?
Yeah, pretty good, thanks, Mel. Excited now that the game's live and we can start fiddling with a few different structures. How's your team looking at the moment?
Yeah, it's in its early stages. I'm just enjoying being able to put players in and out, not really focusing too much on where it's going to land. But it's early days and it's fun. I'm excited to see. I want to take some snips down and compare what happens over the preseason, see what I actually start with. And my goal is to avoid doing any last minute changes on the day of the season launch.
I can say that I've never pulled that off successfully. So good luck. No, I'm excited. There's a lot of big decisions to be made. I can't believe how expensive Ebony Marinoff is. I mean, that's just crazy. There's a lot of big decisions to be made about how we structure up our team. So keen to get into it. So first thing that I think we should just tell all of our listeners today is that this episode is a little different from how we've done this in the past. At this point, we are going to be assuming that the very basics of how AFLW fantasy works are known to listeners. So if you've never played before and you want to understand how the point scoring works, the salary cap, using captains, vice captains, emergencies, if all of these terms sound unfamiliar to you, basically in the article that this is attached to, and we're also going to have one up on the Free Kick page, there are resources that you should be using and looking at first because we feel like that is probably an easier way to learn how to figure out the game.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so many times John and I can listen back to our own voices of us saying how many points you get for a mark and a kick and whatnot, so we're not going to bore everyone with that again. Go have a read. And instead, we'll focus this episode on the strategies at the heart of playing AFLW fantasy. So what you need to be thinking about, how you might structure your team, and some of the different approaches you can be taking throughout the season to get the most out of the game. So the objective of fantasy is to score as many fantasy points as you can over the 12 weeks. Sounds pretty straightforward. But how you go about that kind of depends why you're playing fantasy in the first place. There's kind of a couple of approaches. You could try win the car. That's always a tempting offer. I think it's a Hilux or something this year. Would absolutely love to win it. That goes only to first place. But if you're aiming for the car, there's kind of a few different approaches you might take in how you approach the rounds, and you're really aiming for that top spot. That's kind of the audience we're talking to here. We kind of assume, much like us, that people that are playing this game are kind of trying to finish top of the overall ladder. But that's not why everyone plays. Like, got some mates, we all just join a league, and it's about those head-to-head matchups, who's beating who each week, and the whole kind of objective of the whole season is to win your home league. I unfortunately lost my mate's home league last year and to a guy that's never played AFLW Fantasy before, and it was very embarrassing given I have a podcast on AFLW Fantasy and he won't let me live it down. So, like, if winning your home league is for you, then you're probably not going to be taking on all of these approaches, but a lot of the strategies we're talking about carry over to whatever your objective is with the fantasy game.
Yeah, I think if you're scoring basically as many points as your team can throughout the season, you're more likely to take home your home league and those essential bragging rights, because I can't tell you, I've been in that same position, Mel, where I've been leading the ladder all season, and then Will comes in the last minute and kicks me out of finals, and it is crushing. So you've got to find ways to get as many as you can, try and reduce that risk.
If you're not going home with the car, at least go home bragging above your friends.
But look, let's talk about some of the common strategies that are involved, because I feel like when it comes to structuring our teams, there's sort of a scale of two different approaches to the game. And I think where your team falls on this scale is going to be very important to how you think about picking your players. So I suppose at one end of the spectrum, we've got our guns and rookies approach. And what we're looking at here is picking our guns, the best players, the highest scoring players right from the start, because they are reliable and they're going to get the job done for us. So these are your Ebony Marinoffs, your Jazz Garners, your Ash Riddells, just like absolute superstars of the game that you know are going to be consistently putting up points. And then, unfortunately, that's going to leave us with a very little cash because they are very, very expensive. And so it probably means you're going to have more rookies on your field. And rookies come with a lot of upside. You know, some players like Sinead Goody last season were actually incredible, but they also come with a lot of risk because I also had someone like Kate Lutkins last season who was rookie priced and basically sat on my bench all season contributing nothing to my team. That's one side of the spectrum.
At least with that approach, you've got some guaranteed big points, but you take a bit of a gamble on your rookies. The other side is mid-price madness. So instead of coughing up for some guaranteed points, you just kind of take a gamble with most people in your side. So these mid-prices, they could be mid-priced for a reason. They're just going to score their average. They're kind of appropriately priced. No surprises, no big weeks, and you're going to have a middling team. Or they might go really big and they're probably not going to be that highly owned, so you could have a bit of an advantage there. But that's kind of why it's madness. It's quite risky because there's a small chance of a big upside, but if you get it, it's going to do you really well. So, yeah, this is definitely probably not where you want to be starting. When you've got all of this cash for your starting squad, you probably don't want to be piling it all into a mid-price madness approach, but it comes in handy throughout the season.
Well, yeah, this is where we talk about. There's the two ends of the spectrum. I think they are, it's challenging at either end. You're going to come in with problems no matter what you do. So the question is, where in the middle do you fall? Because I think to some degree, particularly when we talk about captains, owning some of those big dogs, very, very important. But, you know, at the same time, if you don't have any of these really high value players, you're going to start falling behind the eight ball of everyone who does. So, yeah, look, I suppose that is the general two things that we're looking at when we're picking our starting squads. And, you know, the other thing is that throughout the season, our priorities do change. So we've kind of got to consider this not just with our starting squads, but week on week throughout the season. Right at the start, it's very important that we're building value in our side because you want cash. You want to end up with a team that has all the high scoring players. But towards the end of the season, you know, you really just, there's only three rounds left. Cash doesn't matter anywhere near as much.
Mm.
You're just looking to get as many points on field while you can. So it's important that we're making sure that we're not just considering these decisions now, but you know, every now and then we're just looking back at and reflecting on are we making the right call for where our team is right at the moment.
Yeah, so as well as kind of what strategy to be employing based on where we are in the season, there's also a lot of thinking to do around which players you're going to pick. We talk a lot about undervalued players, undervalued primos. What does that mean? So there's a few kind of like buckets of what might make a player undervalued, especially for your starting squad. And these are things like a player who has changed their role in the offseason and they're priced at their previous role, but in their new role coming into the season, they're going to have a lot more access to the ball, potentially a lot more points, a lot more job security maybe. And essentially that's not baked into their average for the start of the season. So you can pick them up and within the first couple of rounds, you expect to see an added number of points added to their value.
Yeah, I think someone like Ruby Tripodi last season was a really good example of that, who, you know, in previous years, she'd kind of been playing off that half forward flank, which is a difficult role for really anyone to play in. But she had a real solid move into that midfield for the North Melbourne Tasmanian women's football team. And what a difficult midfield that is to break into. And she reaped all the rewards because improved her average by, what, 30 points? This is incredible to see.
Mm. Yeah, that was, and so you definitely say that was underpriced.
Mm.
And another key factor we kind of mentioned there was fixture. That's probably not one you're going to be looking at too much at the start of the season, but something like you're looking at which ruck you should be upgrading to. And one of the rucks has a really tough run. You want to be, to some extent, taking the fixture into account. This was really important last season when we had a lot of bye rounds, but luckily this season shouldn't be as relevant, but it's definitely something that can play on your mind when you're making some of those decisions.
I think another one is, you know, this preseason is such a long one and unfortunately injuries do occur to really important players and sides. So trying to see, you know, if someone goes down injured, you know, God forbid, but that usually opens up a spot in the team for someone else to come into. So, you know, last year, not sure, I can't remember, Mel, did you also have Bree Davey in your side?
Yes, but I didn't captain her.
Yeah.
So well, I only got partially burnt.
Yeah, that was a challenging player to have. But as hard as it was for Bree Davey and us fantasy coaches, it created an opportunity for Grace Campbell to move into that Collingwood midfield.
Yeah, so there is a silver lining to injuries sometimes from a fantasy perspective. And the other one is probably just like game plan benefits. So a player changes to a club and their game plan suits better for their role, and this sees a boost in scoring immediately. Someone like Matty Gay, who in the off season last year moved from
Melbourne.
Yeah, we did this before. Like, where was she? We should have written it down. Melbourne over to Essendon, and as a result, became an incredibly valuable kind of fantasy pick from a midfield, from a backline perspective, because that really benefited her game style and saw a lot of the ball in her hand.
Racked up the marks on that backline. It was incredible.
Yeah, so these are a couple of the things to look out for. Obviously, hard to pick. And that's why there's a lot of value in your starting squad. But these are some of the ideas to get those juices flowing for you.
Yeah, I mean, those are definitely your mid-price madness players. And you can see those examples we've given. When it pays off, it usually pays off pretty big. But, you know, on the other side of things, if we're looking for some fully priced guns, we're probably not considering role, because I don't think there's a better role in the game than what Ebony Marinoff has been playing the last few seasons. I think we're more looking at things like a player's consistency, because you don't want someone putting up, you know, 40, 50 points below their average to start the season, and suddenly they've lost a bunch of cash and everyone else is able to bring them in much cheaper than you. So you're looking for someone who can score regularly and who can hit those high captain scores, knowing that your captain score is going to be doubled.
Ebony Marinoff was a classic example of this in last season 2024. Very consistent, very high ceiling. Who could be that role again this year? Oh, maybe Ebony Marinoff once more. Yeah. I mean, well, I don't see that going away.
I'm actually curious, because last season her first round score, 120, was her second lowest for the year. And if she scores that again, she's going to be, what, 30, 25 points below her average? It's actually, it's incredible what she's done, and I have no idea how we're going to pay for it. But how can you not? I think it's going to be the discussion of the season.
I'm glad to not be having the same conversation about Bowers. That was a very painful couple of years for me, although we probably will be having it again. But Bowers is someone that, like, she has that ceiling and we've seen it, but she's kind of dropping away a little bit on the consistency, missing a few games here and there for knee soreness and injury. Kind of, is she going to be playing all season? Is it there? Maybe not.
I mean, a whole season for her recent pregnancy. So,
yes, exactly. And then... Yeah. Yep, that's inconsistent.
Yeah.
but then you've got someone like Emma Carney, who's known for her consistency, but she's not really a fantasy pick for her ceiling. You pick her because you want a defender that's going to score about 60 each week, and she scores about 60 each week. She never really goes up or down in price too much to justify trading her out. But if you put those together, the ceiling and the consistency, those are the picks that you want to be paying full price for up front, because they're going to be value in your side the whole time, and you'll never need to trade them out. Hopefully.
Yeah. So absolutely important things to consider when we're picking our players. We hope that those are some just good guiding principles when you're trying to look at what players to consider. But, you know, of course, whatever you're seeing, if you seem to trust something, then I think going with your gut is far more important than anything else in this game. So definitely use these guiding principles. But whatever you think is right is always a good chance.
There's no worse feeling than taking someone else's advice and then it not paying off. And you're like, well, I'd love to blame you, but I can only blame myself.
Yeah. Is this Mel and I taking absolutely no responsibility for our podcast this season? Yes. Yes, I think it is.
Listen to everything we say with a grain of salt.
Yeah. Unless it's Liam or Will, you should take them and they're 100% accountable. Don't forget that.
Absolutely. A couple of other things to consider. This season is a little bit longer than last season. So last season was annoyingly unique. We had the compressed fixture, 11 rounds played in 10 weeks, and that presented a whole lot of challenges. So if last season was your first time playing fantasy and it kind of burnt you, fear not. This season will be 12 rounds in 12 weeks. So it's going to be a lot easier from that perspective. But something else we need to consider then is it's longer time period for the players to be playing. There's potentially more exhaustion towards the end of the season.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of different changes. I think I fully agree. I think when we look at how we're approaching each week, it is going to be much simpler, which I greatly appreciate. But it does raise a couple extra concerns. I think things like generating cash value across our teams is going to be much more important, because in previous seasons, it's been really hard to finish your team and have a complete set of 16 premiums. Mm-hmm. Now I think it's going to be essential. You're not going to be able to get away with rookies.
At the end of the season.
At the end of the season, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's bad news because yeah. I don't think I've ever got anywhere close to completing my side.
Yeah, it's certainly a challenge, and it's not one that I've had a lot of luck with either in AFLW fantasy. So I think this preseason I've tried to break down a little bit more of how we're going to be looking at these trades, because three trades per week, I think it should be a very doable approach. Three trades per week basically means 36 trades through the 12 rounds. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of trades coming in this season. And, you know, we've only got 16 players on field that we need to turn into full premiums. So five defenders, five midfielders, one ruck, and five forwards. You've also got the five players on the bench. But, you know, as long as your team on field is firing, you know, those players are really just contributing cash. That's our main goal in covering for injury.
Yeah.
Now, in most seasons, using the salary cap that we've got, I'd say somewhere between 8 to 10 of our starting squad are candidates that you might want to hold all season. I think that's very, very possible with the amount of money that we start with.
Hmm. Well, that's the goal.
Yeah.
You want to be picking players at the start that you plan to hold to the end, so you don't need to mess around with wasting money and effort on trades.
It's going to be very challenging trying to make sure that we get that right, but I think that's definitely the goal. This year, however, there are a lot of asterisks on those numbers of 8 to 10, because we've got players like Ebony Marinoff, who costs twice what anyone else in the game seems to. And then we've got players like Kiara Bowers and Bonnie Toogood, who are incredible fantasy players that are so, so undervalued. So I think, you know, if you're starting with Ebony Marinoff and a lot of expensive players, you might only be able to afford 8 of them. If you're going leaning heavily into the value side of things, you might be able to afford like 12 of them. So... Mm. It's going to be really, really interesting to see how the different starting squads look across the league this year.
Yeah, and starting squads, some basic hygiene principles is you want to be picking players that are going to be playing. You'll get confirmation of that a few days before the round one, but you want to make sure that every single player on your field is definitely playing. Especially important if you're taking a Guns and Rookies approach and you're picking rookies, they need to be named and playing for that to be valuable round one.
Yeah, preferably playing round two as well, although that's harder to predict. Yeah. But look, I think with the extra long season this year, I think it's not just going to be that we have to get to our 16 premium players by the end of the season. I think getting there as soon as possible is going to be the goal. So using just like a rough starting guide, I'm looking at my squad this year and I'm assuming that I'm not going to start with 8, I'm not going to start with 12, I'm going to start somewhere in the middle. Let's just pretend that I've got 10 players that I trust. Hmm. And that means that I have 6 players that I need to upgrade through the AFLW fantasy season before I can complete my team and say, I've got the best team out there.
I love it. So simple.
So simple. It sounds really, really easy. So I'm looking at how I'm going to be able to use my 3 trades per week, because that at the end of the day, you know, we're talking about cash as a resource. But these trades are limited. We've only got 3 every week. And I think figuring out how we're going to be using these is something that I want to be thinking about as early as possible when setting up my starting squad. So
yep.
I think in rounds 1 and 2, the plan in those weeks is going to be to use those trades to fix up any mistakes that I made in my starting squad and dealing with any injuries that occur right at the start of the season, because injuries occur all the time. No one gets the perfect starting squad. So I think what we need to look at is what types of players do we want to fix up early in the season in those rounds 1 and 2. My first rule when it comes to these, and I'm curious to hear yours, Mel, because I don't know if it's going to be the same, but my first rule here is that I'm focusing on holding my premiums and trusting my gut on the ones that I picked in the start of the season. The amount of times that I've seen people jump off really, really good players just because they've had a down week to start with, and it wasn't due to role, it was just an off week. And then they turn into really, really good players down the track. So I'm trying to make sure I'm not jumpy at the start, and I'm really just focusing on who I need to get in. Because I think there's a lot of players that you sort of see in those first few weeks that you're like, they're sensational and I need to jump on now before their cash goes through the ceiling.
I fully agree with what you've just said in theory. I wrote my notes and I was like, reasons why you might trade out a player because, you know, the role wasn't there, or they were injured or something, or they were not what you were expecting, which is in direct contradiction to what I didn't read in your notes, which is like, don't be jumpy if your best player had a bad week. I'm like, nope, best player, had a bad week, wasn't what I was expecting, get him out. And I look back at what I did last season and I traded out Benici for Nanscorn, which is such a sideways in round one for no good reason, just because I was like, no, not loving what I'm seeing in Benici, would not recommend. So that's a classic what not to do. If you put a premium there in your starting squad, you put them there for a reason. So back it is the theory. But I will flag, like, I do look at trading out players as well from the perspective of, like, rookies and stuff. If I'm not seeing the role or the game time there, or maybe they just didn't score as much as I wanted them to because I thought this was going to be, like, a gun rookie. Swapping them for a rookie that is going to impress and be a cash cow early is quite important, I find. And then, yeah, trading in, if there's someone you're like, oh, damn, I really need that player in my side and I haven't got them, that's a good reason to force a trade as well.
Yeah, I think missing someone like Sinead Goody last year would have been an absolute crushing blow. You needed her if you were going to make cash in your midfield. Yeah. So 100%, those are the players you've got to get in. When it comes to role missing out on a player, absolutely I see that as a way of trading someone out. But I prefer to look at the players that the role is there for them. And for some reason, every year I seem to just ignore someone super important. And I should just trust that player looked amazing. I need to jump on that player.
Well, there's a reason why we keep saying watch and wait during the preseason is sometimes we just need to see them in round one to know that that potential is going to be realised and then they can come into our side.
Yeah. I appreciate you not gloating right now because what player did I miss last season? I think it was Ash McCarthy.
Ash McCarthy?
Yeah. We could just call this the listen to Mel round one trades. That would be the one.
It was when we were drafting a team and I put in Ash McCarthy and you vetoed her. And I was like, excuse me?
I know. Biggest mistake I made last season.
Oh, amazing. Well, rather than mistakes, focusing on what we should be doing, how does your approach to trades change when we get a bit later on into the season?
Yeah. So basically from round three onwards, I think our trade priorities change a little bit. And the main reason is because I think you need to give your cash rookies or your mid-price madness players a little bit of time to rise in value, because as soon as they're making that cash, we start doing our upgrades. You know, we've got six upgrades to make, and I think at this point of the year, I'm planning on making one upgrade every week between rounds 3 and 8. And that'll go from 10 in my starting side to 16. The goal there is that actually works out. We're going to find out if that's true, but that is the hope. Basically, I'm going to be trading one of my players on field up, using two of my rookies' cash on the bench to go down to the next rookie that will hopefully start this constant churn of cash value coming in and out of my side. I think finding those value players is going to be so important throughout the season, and just seeing, you know, what rookies are picked, what are their low break evens. These are the priorities.
I agree. And I've added a few things that keep catching me out in this period. So one of them is like upgrading to a mid-pricer or a mid-price madness type player rather than a trusted elite. So sometimes I'll be like, oh, I want to do an upgrade. I don't have just enough cash to get to that player I want. So I'll compromise and go with someone who's a little bit more specky in the middle. And so many of my trades, I look back at them and I'm like, that wasn't an upgrade to an elite. That was not part of the strategy. I think compromising in that way can just set you up for a continuous not making any cash gen from your players situation. So if you're in that kind of consideration of, oh, this trade isn't working for me, think, are you really trying to trade out a certain player or are you really trying to trade in a certain player? And make sure you're hitting at least one of those objectives rather than just three meh trades and not ending up with any primos. The other thing that keeps catching me out is trading out my cash cows too early. So being like, oh, yep, they've peaked. They've made me lots of cash. Time to go. And real bummer when you also do that and trade in not a premium, but trading someone out too early and then actually there's more value to be had there. Like a couple of weeks into last season, traded out Maeve Chaplin because I thought, yep, she's made some cash, move her on. And she just kept going up and up and up. And these are hard things to predict, but they're always good to have a second thought around, like, what's the fixture like? Is one more week going to add any extra cash to this player? Yeah, because it's all about cash maximization during this period.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important to try and get full value. And I couldn't agree more. I look at my round three trades last year and I was looking at players like Ash Saint, Anya McDonough, players that sort of had a good run for a little bit to start the year and then just fell back down to earth, and I'm sort of left with these halfway marks. It's yeah. a real challenge, though, because I feel like on the other side, one of the players that I didn't get in early that I regret was Alice O'Loughlin, because she had a great season as a forward, and I wanted to jump on that before she took off. So it's a challenge trying to commit to the right players at the right time.
It is, but that's why we love this game.
It is. It really is.
And it's all good and well for us to talk about all of this, but who knows what we'll actually execute on later in the season.
Well, this is the thing when we talk about injuries. This is why we're trying to plan for only one up at a time. I've seen a lot of people try to go, oh, I can maybe get two people to these sort of mid-price players. I think that's where you're going to end up, A, in situations like getting these not quite good enough players, but also it means whenever an injury happens, you're suddenly going to be left without cash. So I like the idea of just trying to rotate one at a time and make sure you've always got a third trade that you can pivot to an injury or that you can pivot to, you know, fixing up a really underperforming player. There's options to consider with that third trade. So I wouldn't be allocating your trades ahead of time too much, more than just one up, one down, and then hopefully a second one down. But end of the season.
Yeah, so final rounds, like those last few weeks, this is where you're really zigzagging your way to success, is how I have framed it, which is you're kind of sidestepping up. Maybe there's a few sideways trades here, slowly getting incrementally better towards finishing off your team. Like in a previous season, this might have been still frantically trying to upgrade the rest of your primos, but hopefully in a season like this where we can potentially be starting with a lot of locks, it's more about those tweakings towards the end.
Yeah, so I think, what is this, rounds 9 through 10 through the end of the season, we're probably looking at that point of having a team of quote-unquote premiums, players that are quite expensive. We're not fielding any more rookies on field. And at that point, I do think, yeah, it's just trying to do those sideways trading. And this is probably, we were talking before about people with good fixtures. I think that's where picking players with those becomes really, really important. So if you look at some of the highest scores from round 10 or week 10 last season, you know, you could have paid, you know, $1 million. Oh, hold on. Why would my alarm go off right now in the middle of recording? It's such poor planning.
9 o'clock.
Yeah, it's Miley Cyrus. We're not going to worry about that, guys. Don't worry about it at all. So last season, you could have paid $1 million in week 10 and picked up Ebony Marinoff, and it would have netted you 107 points. Because she had a challenging last round. Alternatively, well, I say a challenging last round. It was more she was probably being rested coming into finals.
Yeah. Pacing.
Whilst alternatively, you could have picked up Eliza McNamara for about half the price, who was coming up against the Wooden Spooners in Collingwood and put up 115. So it's these sort of things right at the end of the season where it is so, so tough trying to figure out who's going to have the good runs. But that becomes the game. So something to look forward to come the end of the season.
And I love the end of the season because you really get to pick which approach you're going to take. There's the nothing to lose, so I'm going to risk it all approach, which is where I'm usually at, which is like you're not where you wanted to be in terms of rankings for the competition, or you're not winning your league with your mates. So it's all about those specky picks. You're looking for like lowly owned players, unique players, where if they go big, you alone will reap the benefits. And if they flop, well, you were already not doing so well anyway, so it's okay.
Is this Will's like approach from Will. Day
yeah.
one?
Yeah. this is Will's starting squad advice. But it works really well in these last final weeks. Alternatively, if you're in a more privileged position, like sitting just outside top 100, top 1,000, you're really trying to play it safe. You're trying to stay in the middle of the pack, not do anything too spicy that'll see you slip behind everyone else. You kind of want to be riding it with them and maybe have a slight advantage here or there, but like your trades are around picking those lock players that you know are going to get you a lot of points.
Yeah. I think this is also where we talk about uniqueness. It also changes a little bit for players who are just focusing on their home leagues, because at that point you're probably just looking against the matchups of the teams that you know you're going to be facing. So if I was coming up against Mel's team in a grand final, I'd be looking, oh, okay, she has Ebony Marinoff and I don't. Maybe I need to bring her in, because that is a very, very expensive player that's going to destroy my team if I don't have her. That's the sort of decision that I would be making. Or am I going, oh, I think I reckon I can outscore Tyler Hanks there. You know, maybe I'll run my gauntlet with Eliza McNamara. I don't know how you're making decisions here. These are the sort of decisions we got to make.
Yeah, so overall, that's how we approach the season. In terms of any players that you're thinking about already, Jono, for the season?
Yeah, so look, I think I've already mentioned it in the launch episode, but wow, I think Bonnie Toogood is way too much value to be missing out on. This is a player who's averaged 100 in the past and is priced under 40. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, I expect her to be very highly owned.
How about yourself?
It's too soon to say. I mocked Liam for it the other day in that he wasn't giving anything away, but I'm going to say cannot comment.
Cannot comment. Sure, sure. No, I think I've made a lot of iterations of teams at the moment, and there hasn't been one that hasn't featured Kiara Bowers, Bonnie Toogood, and Lauren Young. I'm fairly confident she's going to play. Yet to be seen, but Port Adelaide youngster, and I think she could be a very, very handy forward for us. So, yeah, excited to see what everyone's teams look like when we start getting closer to the start of the season.
Yes. So you can find Free Kick on Twitter and Instagram, and please feel free to take some snips of your team, share them around with us, either for question or just to admire them. We love engaging with everyone in terms of their fantasy squads.
We do love admiring people, that's for sure.
I think we're gonna cut that bit out. That's
we're gonna end that there. Yeah, that's fine. Let's get off before it gets any worse.
Well, it's been great chatting with you, Jono. Chat to you more later.
Yeah, excited to see how everyone's teams goes, and looking forward to get into our line by line episodes coming to you. First up, defenders.
Yes, stay tuned for that one.
All right, see you everyone.